Born in the pandemic era, thriving in the Zoom era, it's Resonance Rewind with Robin Pierce, Jessica Burtis, Pamela Sue Mann, Kathy Manzo, Alex Lefchuk, and more, sharing lessons from the creatives of yesteryear for the population of today.
Our dad told us all these stories about growing up here.
Tell you it sucks?
I think he kind of loved it.
We came here as a family.
It's too dangerous for them to know.
It's more dangerous if they don't.
You're Superman?
No, we've seen Superman before. We've seen him.
You told the boys you're Superman.
Couldn't lie to him anymore. This is gonna keep my family together.
Clark, it's gonna tear it apart.
All the times you were gone, you lied to me, you both did.
I can't just abandon the world.
The world will always need Superman. Right now, this family needs you more.
When you have twins and you fancy a return to Smallville and you're married to an ace reporter, what are the options that are open to you? Maybe the team of Resonance Rewind can help provide the necessary advice for the latest adventure in the aforementioned Resonance Rewind.
Thank you.
Lee Toland Krieger, a director I first came across when he directed The Age of Adeline, which is something we'll probably look at in future editions of Resonance Rewind. But we're here to talk specifically about the latest incarnation of course, the orphan from Krypton, where he becomes double orphaned in this particular one. And we have the Kents in full force with Jonathan and, of course, Jordan assisting in their whole line of things. And as we have an all-male lineup at present, that could well change, of course. I can actually read out Pamela Sue Mann's approach, which maintains that it has a lot to do with lockdown and COVID, this particular episode. But let's find out what Jared Palmer actually makes of Superman and Lois, episode one.
Hi, Alex. Can you hear me?
Of course we can. We have superheroing. Yeah. Hearing. It's that kind of show.
Well, actually, I went into this show a bit skeptical about it because, of course, Tyler and Elizabeth both appeared previously on the CW shows. And I believe a couple of years after Supergirl, maybe in a couple of seasons, I didn't really like their portrayal of Superman, especially with Elseworlds. I feel as if they put him down a bit a lot, and they've done the same with Batman. But coming into the show, when I watched the first episodes, I really had a fun time watching it. I think for me, this was, apart from Henry Cavill being Superman as well, this was another really big hit for DC, because I really loved the way that they both portrayed their relationships, the family struggles with the sons as well. And I definitely felt that the acting was just on par, ridiculously superb in every sense of the way.
Ridiculously superb. That's an interesting thing and quite a lot to live up to. Perhaps it restored your faith in the Greg Berlanti Arrowverse. Let's move up the scale then to Stephen Pierce. Stephen, Greek mythologies writ large, a season of hope, the need for hope, essential that we have hope as the story makers, Greg Berlanti and indeed Jim Lee, who in the extras of the DVD is actually quoted as saying, what this is all about is really with great power comes great responsibility. I think I've heard that used somewhere before, but then again, Jim Lee's probably got a certain right to do that. What are your thoughts, Stephen?
I really enjoyed Superman and Lois. I haven't been the biggest fan of the Arrowverse other than the Arrow series itself. One of the things that really struck me with this is that you have a brief recap of how Superman and Lois get together, which I absolutely loved. Because so many times in the films and the series, they spend so much time waiting for those two to get together, whereas they go through it in a breezy 3-4 minutes. I also like the fact that Superman in this actually does Superman things, just like in the comics, like with the reactor freezing the lake and using an iceberg to cool it down. But the one thing that really I think I like most of all with this is the fact that in Smallville, we waited 10 years to see a man who we know can fly. And this, he's doing it straight from the very beginning. It's fantastic.
Certainly the cooling of the reactor owes a lot, I believe, to Superman 3, as indeed does the homage to the Max Fleischer uniform from the cartoon Superman, which was actually there. And also it's good to know that in terms of the Arrowverse, Jared also added it's part of the multiverse of the Arrowverse. It gets very confusing, really, but of course taking place on a different Earth from the Arrowverse, which was confirmed in season 2. Pamela Sue Mann, I was about to actually quote you a few moments ago with respect to your thoughts on this, which says, this show has the COVID emotionality all over it, tugs at your heartstrings, a bit too much so for Superman, in my humble opinion. IMO. Anyway, HO, what are your thoughts now you've had a chance to percolate a little bit more on this incarnation, this latest incarnation of the Superman mythology?
You know, that was before I watched the whole entire thing. And it made me cry a few times. And I think it's because it's so real and there's a kind of like COVID real. And I was thinking of the gravitas that the writers had in their minds when they must have been writing this, because if they came out in 2021, then it was obviously during the acute COVID time that it was probably, you know, brought up and whatever they do to make it happen. But it was, I don't know if you guys thought that, but I definitely thought that it was so emotional. And the music was just like, if it wasn't enough to be, I feel like I just, I'm channeling Robin. If it wasn't enough for it to be emotional, the music just took it and shoved you just ever so slowly over that emotional cliff. It was a little bit over egging like that. That said, they did a great job of casting a sort of a young Timothy Chalamet type of character. The actors were fantastic. I really thought the actors were really great. Maybe it's because it's relatable in the sense that the sort of underacting, the sort of strong woman, that, you know, a lot of the current more woke, dare I say, aspects of the way things are being made these days, those elements were there, and the type of acting was relatable, very relatable. I really surprisingly was invested in it. I liked it. I didn't like sometimes all the super realism of everything. I mean, I guess that was the intent, to talk about, you know, the like drugs with kids and these very real things. I think maybe that's it. It was a little bit too unmasked in the sense that it was handing you basically what life is like now. And Superman's always been such fantasy. So I'm sure they were doing that purposefully. I both liked that and did not like that at the same time.
It's intriguing that for an American mythology that's been with us for nigh on 85 years now, there's still a longevity to the character, the creation, who has been reinvented several times, of course, since John Byrne effectively took the bull by the horns and reinvented Superman in the 1980s after, of course, movie version by Richard Donner emerged and took the world by storm in 1978. Music was by Dan Roemer, but I know the world is waiting not just for Hero with Hope, but obviously the views of Robin Pearce in this particular side of things there. So your own thoughts, Robin, having heard some of the suggestions there of where they pitched this particular incarnation.
Okay, I'm going to start with a Robin confession. I have avoided this. I've been watching the Arrowverse since the first issue of Arrow. I went through Flash until it became too tiresome and too touchy-feely and let's hug everything out. I never once understood what on earth they were trying to do with Legends of Tomorrow. Supergirl, it seemed to be more about the issues of everybody around her than, you know, Supergirl. So I never bothered watching Batwoman. My main successes in the this whole sort of run of things have actually been Black Lightning and Stargirl, absolutely loved. So you made me watch Superman and Lois, and well, I watched it for the first time yesterday. My main concerns were, how were they going to mess with Superman? How are they going to make him overly sensitive? You know, how woke is this going to be? And how wound up am I going to get? And can they bring anything new that will not irritate the bejesus out of me? I watched it. I loved the Reader's Digest version of the whole origin, because let's face it, if you don't know Superman's origins by now, why are you watching a show called Superman? Then they did something, and you've kind of touched upon it, Alex. When Superman makes his first appearance, that really resonated like a slap across the face, because he came to land holding a Chrysler PT Cruiser in green. The Chrysler PT Cruiser is modeled on late 30s, early 40s cars. And this was a direct real-life depiction of Action Comics number one's cover. Superman's first appearance, June 1938. I wasn't there myself. I missed it by a couple of months. From then on, I thought, this is going to be good. And indeed it was. I love the fact that they took us off in different directions, bringing us something new. Clark Kent, fired from the Daily Planet, going back to Smallville. You know, we know that he's married Lois Lane, and we know, in the comics at least, they have a son. year they have twins. And now Clark is going to live more the simple life, but he's trying that duality with being not only what his family needs, but what the whole world needs. And as Steve said, he's doing real Superman things, like freezing a lake and chucking it into a nuclear reactor to cool it down. There's a supervillain with an all too familiar name. I mean, this is epic on every single level. And I myself am sorry that I have waited about 3 years to watch this, because as soon as I'd watched the first episode streaming yesterday, I was going down a South American river to make sure that I've got these two discs that are two seasons already in existence in my collection, and the binge has started.
Well, there we are. Strong comments indeed, given that the series is moving into season three as well. It feels like it's my fault, but of course the classic line we have, no one ever dreams about their problems, but every life has them, even the extraordinary ones, as Lois Lane's character actually says. I think there were certain aspects of Morgan Hedge which probably resonated more with the current incarnation of Elon Musk and Twitter, really, than any kind of former president of the United States. And I feel, again, we have the battle, which apparently you could probably speak to, in terms of the loss of small-town America, the takeover of the corporations, and the fact that a lot of places that are of the ilk of the rural middle America, the heartland, if you like, are effectively being ripped apart and being tempted by cash-rich billionaires to actually say, we'll do this, and then nothing ever happens, or indeed basic sadness returns to the whole thing. Was that something which connected?
Well, yeah, I mean, to the point where it was very realistic. I mean, you know, there's Superman. But it was very realistic in those ways. Like they peeled back a lot of that fantasy, and they could be just talking about modern America, honestly. You know, the problems, as I said, with kids and drugs and the big corporate takeovers, you know, the skeletization of, you know, these former towns. And then all of a sudden, you know, you see them rebuilt, but all the big corporations are in what used to be the tiny little, you know, mom and pop owned shops. Absolutely. You know, and I guess, you know, it's funny because I don't really think that often about being an American, and on a show like this, obviously, I'm thinking about that, because I feel like it's just something that we just assume is happening everywhere, and to an extent, it sort of is. But you know, this is the American way. This has happened even in our funkiest, coolest little cities. It's happened everywhere, and it's happened, you know, parts of upstate New York that were just, you know, booming once upon a time, and fell into the really real depression. And then you've got all the big box stores and the giant corporations coming in and seizing their opportunity like piranhas. It's absolutely true. I mean, I think the one thing that bummed me out is just there was so much reality in it, as I said. And I think that I just could tell, it was just like, oh no. I mean, it's so close to home. It's so close to home. And I think that initially made it hard. Once I got into it, it was like, you know, Robin, I'd like to continue watching it. I thought the actors were great.
I must admit, tear was caused by the demise of Martha Kent, which echoed, obviously, the earlier loss to a heart attack of Jonathan Kent, played by Jordan Elsass. Forgive me, Jonathan Kent, still functioning with us, but Jonathan, the original father stepfather of Superman, which was problematic. There were some nice touches, though. I mean, Robin, you've alluded to the notion of some of the nods in the direction of classic Superman. Of course, we have the Cushings with Sarah Cushing and the wonderful Lana Lang Cushing. And, of course, Kyle Cushing, surely some sort of made-up name. Well, it is a fiction in the series, played by Eric Valdez, KC, with not so much a Sunshine Band, but his own particular way of taking life, etc. Were you less irritated by Lana Lang's Cushing's portrayal, this time by Emmanuel Chikri, as opposed to your views in the earlier Smallville we looked at recently, when, of course, you weren't a fan of Kristin Kreuk's?
Well, yes. I mean, she didn't take me at all. I mean, these are now adults who have moved on. They've got families. Before I go on to that, I would like to just generally ask the panel, did you spot the Easter egg as well as the reenactment of the cover of Action Comics number one? The whiteboard behind Clark when he's phoning his mother when he gets home. Notes to contact Donna, Siegel, and Shuster. Richard Donner, of course, the director of Superman the movie, Siegel and Shuster, the original creators of Superman in the 1930s. No character here actually irritated me. I mean, okay, maybe a little bit, Lana's husband, but then he is meant to. I mean, he is the long form version would be, he is a Richard, is he not?
Yes, okay. I mean, again, you mentioned Michelle Scarabelli's portrayal of Martha Kent. Stephen, let's turn to yourself. I mean, would you ever have a scenario where basically Robin would have to be most embarrassed because you wanted to be the villain character as opposed to the Superman character when you're playing your computer games?
Well, that's one of the things I wanted to mention that I really liked in the show, was the fact that Jordan Kent, they had a bit of fourth wall breaking with showing him play the video game Injustice and saying Superman sucks, because I love that game and I have it. But yeah, we do actually do quite a bit of Superman video games, and I've lost more than I care to admit.
Jared, you're giving thumbs up to that. I mean, was that something, again, which you appreciated about the younger incarnations, the Kent offspring, the twins, the fraternal twins?
I did, because I also have the game myself, and I tend to play as Raiden for Mortal Kombat because of the references. But I did enjoy that segment. I didn't think they would put it in that one, because I know for Mortal Kombat X, they put it with Shazam. But it was interesting to see it. And it was also interesting that they decided to pass on with Martha Kent, because I think that's only been a very recent thing in the New 52, where both Martha and Jonathan have died and Clark has grown up to be Superman without them. And then it was later revealed in the comics that that was caused by Dr. Manhattan when they had the crossover. So who knows, maybe Dr. Manhattan might appear sometime in the series. But yeah, and no,
that's
I
a
really
real
do
superhero. Pamela, let's turn back to yourself again, because I suspect that we might be the only two people on the panel today that actually don't actually have the video games that Robin, Jared and Stephen were talking about. And I'm not going to sort of be vague about that. I don't intend to purchase them either. Anyway, Pamela, any thoughts again at the narrative and how this is being presented to us, and indeed the offspring, because you can, of course, identify being married to your own super individual, Jerry. Jerry Leonard, of course, ace musician, what it's like to have a teenage girl around the whole sort of system. So presumably there is a kind of slight identification there.
Well, no, absolutely. And that's what I'm speaking of. I too, Alex, I feel like I'm out of my league. I don't know any of these games, and I would be so funny to watch attempting to even play and have any kind of coordination to do it,
which could be a series in itself, but maybe we'll put that to Greg Berlanti for another possible option.
Yeah, it's I'd be doing my best I Love Lucy impressions without even trying. So I would say that, yeah, I mean, when I said hits real to home, I think that's it too. I mean, I had a teen during COVID, and when all the teens were, having such mental health crises that all of the, all of the beds in Bellevue and all the psych wards were full. You couldn't even get in. Not that we tried to, thank goodness, but there was a lot going on. It's been a really difficult time these past few years. I think COVID notwithstanding, but who knows, to have a teenage girl or a teenage person coming up in this world, and also like them having moved from Smallville to Metropolis in New York City around that time, you know, having a teenager grow up in the city and having these kinds of issues come up and this kind of new sorts of peer pressure with the Facebook and the FaceTime and the whole social media. And we've had our share of difficulties with that too. It's very, very hyper real. I know that they made a definite decision to do that. And they did that phenomenally well. Honestly, they did it really, really well. So I think it's great. I think you have to be in the mood for something like that, you know, because I always thought of these things as total escapism, you know. But again, they made a choice not to do. They tied that in. I think they did a beautiful job. I think it's beautifully, beautifully done. But they definitely brought that sort of gravitas of the, if you have a teenager now, these are some of the things you might be experiencing. These are the ways that they're really talking. These are the issues that they're really having. It's very truthful.
And of course, we I'm giving a spoiler alert here, find out in subsequent episodes, so not too far down the line, that Eliza, played by Coral Humphrey, Jonathan Kent's girlfriend, effectively, who we see only communicating via Zoom or a similar thing, effectively, she dumps him as well somewhere down the line. So there are a whole range of things there in terms of how we see relationship issues opening up and so on, which, Robin, I suspect you might... I mean, was that something you thought, well, this is great?
Because
this is good?
I have to plug my ears then. Have you finished now? Because I've spent money on these discs.
Oh, don't worry, Robin. It's not a major spoiler. It's just a minor one.
Well, I didn't
so
hear
worry
it
not.
Anyway, and now I can't listen to this show until I've watched the episodes. Good grief! It's not bad enough you upset Richard Fitzwilliams with this kind of behaviour, sir. Really, I protest.
Okay, moving on. Breathe. Remember, breathe, and always sort of take a deep breath from that point of view. Do you feel as though the characterization has been effective here, or was it falling into the trap which you've accused Arrow and Supergirl and other Berlanti-based shows from kind of reaching?
From the two episodes I've seen, no, it most certainly hasn't. I was expecting to be annoyed by something. I it was just my inner programming, because, you know, I love my DC comic book. I really do. And I don't know. There was something about this. I was hoping to see something new, something I hadn't seen before. And they briefly touched upon it in the later season of Lois and Clark, where they got married. But to try and see Superman as a family man going back to the farm, this, while also dealing with whatever super menaces might be on the horizon, and we certainly know of one already because he appears in this episode, I'm intrigued as to the possibilities, because there wasn't a single second in this show where I bought out of it. I was fully bought in. I love the conceit of twin sons, and one of them having you know, emotional issues, anxieties and such, and didn't come across as being rammed in to make a point. There was no virtue signaling here. It is a clear, valid part of the ongoing setup of the world that they built within the pilot. So, no, there was absolutely nothing for me to get wound up about. And I'd seen pictures of this particular actor, Tyler Hoechlin, as Superman. And I thought, a bit skinny, isn't he, really? But you forget all about that, because it kind of reverses what I said about Christopher Reeve's portrayal a few weeks ago, when I said about Dean Cain being, you know, sort of slimmer or less bulky than Christopher Reeve, because Christopher Reeve was always a heavily muscled guy in a suit playing a dork as Clark Kent, which, although the portrayal was endearing, the physique was kind of wrong for the character. But in this, carried it off. And again, a couple of weeks ago, I said, you know, Terry Hatcher, you know, is the greatest Lois Lane I've seen on screen, period. Well, I've seen two episodes of Superman and Lois, and, you know, Terry Hatcher's position, I don't want to overcommit, but it may not be as concrete as it was 3 weeks ago. So, you know, all the portrayals, they're just spot on. The fact that they're going against corporate America's ruthless takeover of small towns and basically strip mining towns. I mean, it's there. The realism, you know, it's a challenge to keep Superman as this mythical being, which he is, which is why the comic book has survived, what, 86 years or so? While also grounding him in a reality without making him look completely absurd. So the fact that, you know, a high-ranking general, although, yeah, we know he's Lois Lane's father, has him basically on speed dial to sort out problems. It all makes sense and kind of harks back to the fact that Ronald Reagan has Superman basically on speed dial in Dark Knight Returns. It all worked for me. I wish I could complain, but I just can't.
Smallville, a place where you can spend a whole year in one afternoon, said Jonathan, of course.
There's a place just like that. 5 minutes drive from this house.
There you go. Okay, we're coming around to characters. So, Stephen, let's come to you first. Who would be your favourite character in this particular incarnation? I mean, we heard from your dad there an interesting line about the father of Lois Lane, of course, who does play a particularly significant line in the whole sequence. That's General Sam Lane, played by Dylan Walsh. But you may decide to go for Sarah Cushing, of course, played by Indy Navarette. Which one or ones would you like to actually suggest gets your vote?
I'd actually, with this one, have to go with both Superman and Lois equally. And the reason for that is because if you watch the 10 seasons of Smallville and you see them develop, you can see both the characters from that series, both actors' portrayals, kind of carry over into this. And it's almost as if this is what happened later on, like the next stage of that story. So I would have to actually give equal billing to both.
Okay, so Elizabeth Tulloch's Lois Lane and Tyler Hoechlin's Clark Kent / Superman. Interestingly, one minor gripe that I actually have is I was bemused in terms of why they called it Superman and Lois as opposed to Lois and Superman, because obviously we had Lois and Clark, the New Adventures of Superman. I would have felt that actually would have given the female lead the slightly higher proximity in terms of Lois and Superman. But nevertheless, Superman and Lois it is. Jared, your favourite character, please.
Oh, I think it's a hard one for this one, but I think from where we're going to go with it, I think it will have to be Lois. Because especially when it comes to the later episodes, you see a lot more of the tension build up between her family.
Robin will be plugging his ears now if we start talking about the later episodes and the way it actually goes.
Don't worry, Robin, no spoilers, but it does... It does, the tension and the way it's developed in the later episodes is just amazing. And it's honestly, I think Elizabeth does an amazing job in it. And especially when I've watched when she was on with Grimm, I definitely think that also does carry a bit from that show as well. And honestly, I think she really did Lois very well in that episode and the rest. Don't worry, Robin, I won't spoil it again for you.
Grimm is another series we'll probably be looking at in the not-too-distant future. Okay, Pamela, favourite character from yourself, please.
Yeah, I've done a bit of homework here. Okay, so I love that she goes by the name of Bitsy. And I'm glad I didn't know that before I watched her, because she would not strike me as a Bitsy. I agree with Robin. I think she's an amazing Lois Lane. She's ever so real. I really like her. Very intelligent, not over-egging it, nothing. Just, she's intense. She's great. And Alexander Garfin, I think is his name, who is a Manhattanite, woohoo, and that thus the Timothée Chalamet look and that vibe, the kind of mumble speak kind of vibe, but very sensitive. He leans in to hug his dad, you know, troubled, dark, brooding, very realistic. I see teenagers that look like that all around. And he's only 19, so he must have been about, he must have been 17 when he did it, or wow, that's impressive. So I'd say the two of them really, really stood out to me. I mean, of course, the Superman, I can't pronounce his name, so I'm not going to try, but he was phenomenal.
Tyler, just call him Tyler.
Tyler, okay. The only reason I'm not choosing Tyler is because I love the underdog, and even though Superman is kind of the underdog in a way, or at least Clark is, I believe that his wife and his dark, troubled son are truly the underdogs. Woot, woot!
Robin, follow that.
Okay. I've said before, and I stand by this, that any film or any TV series featuring Superman will stand or fall on the lead actor. We're there to see Superman, are we not? This is why he gets the top billing. And, you know, he and Lois are superbly, absolutely superbly played in perfection. They, however, are not my favorite characters. I can't believe I'm going to say this. The ones that really caught my attention were the twin sons, Jonathan and Jared.
Jordan. Jared's with us now.
The interplay between them, and I loved the fact that they were two opposites, one athletic, one not athletic, you know, one has a girlfriend, one does. It was all played so well, and I feel there is a mine of drama there that can be played out among, you know, the distribution of superpowers. I have a feeling, I don't know, I've only seen the episode.
I could tell you, Robin, but I won't.
No, you cannot tell me. I will put you on mute. There's a lot of things here that can be played out. I mean, I would love to give the whole thing to you know, the Kent family, but that would be a cruel and unusual cop out. Much as I liked both the sons' portrayal, the one that made me smirk the most, Jonathan, his smart aleck remarks. You know, there was something about him thinking he is going to make me laugh in future episodes, because I liked his cockiness. But then again, I enjoyed his sensitivity towards his brother. So, yeah, I will give it to I'd love to give it to both sons, but let's go with Jonathan Kent.
Okay, brought us neatly round to our scores. Stephen, your scores, please.
I'm actually going to have to give this one a 10 because I can't think of a single thing I didn't like in it. It was perfect.
Yeah. I mean, I'll be going probably 8.5 because of the video games and the slight irritation with a couple of the other aspects which are there. Anyway, Jared.
You are such a Luddite, aren't you?
I thought you have to disagree with that. I have to disagree with that. I'm going to have to give it, I'm going to say a 9.6 only because I just wanted to have, so I had to wait.
Okay. Pamela?
That's the episodes.
Goodness. All right. I think I'm going to be really, I'm just going to give it a 9. I'm going to give it a 9 because it was really well written. It was really well acted. It was not overdone or underdone in that way. It was, you know, who knows how it'll stand up in 10 years time, but I think that was good. The reason I'm taking a point away is because the music, there's a lot of that sort of pushing open ocean of strings that take you, and I feel like it kind of it sort of marginalizes or dumbs down the audience, makes you think that you're not capable of, like, what I love with old movies is that they actually sometimes there's silence, oral television, just silence, no music. And sometimes I feel like that's more powerful, you know, or like a single note thing or something that's just compelling, a repetitive kind of thing. But a wash of strings that just if you're not feeling a little emotional, that wash of strings is just going to bring you to tears, which is what it's intended for, but I feel like it's a little manipulative. So I'm taking away that point for that.
Robin.
Damn. And I was going to look for the soundtrack CD because I liked it. you know what? I gave Smallville and Lois and Clark, I think, an 8 and a 9. History is going to be made. Even though I didn't want to watch this a few days ago, it has to be a 10. It's got to be a 10. That's it. History has been made.
As Pamela has literally fallen off the chair. Exactly.
Jared Palmer has been struck mute. Alex Lefchuk looks like he needs an aspirin.
Next week, after wrapping up our little Smallville Superman trilogy, we dial back a bit to actually consider a special which Jared and Pamela have already, through the magic of time travel, produced with myself, which is, of course, the look at Navalny, a true superhero, which deservedly, I think, gets a 10. No spoilers there, but we'll find out more about that. And then the next A Resonance Rewind back in the world of fiction, of course, will be saying don't panic in huge, bright letters, because that will be the one which we explore the Douglas Adams classic from the movie world of Martin Freeman and more, indeed, MOSD. Indeed, we'll probably say so long and thanks for all the fish, which is probably one of the reasons why the Pearsons will not be taking part in the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy event. So it goes. It shocked Alan Stevens. It still surprises me. Likewise, the following week in Blake Seven. But nevertheless, to Pamela Sue Mann, to Jared Palmer, to Robin and Stephen Pierce, huge thanks. And of course, we end with more soaring strings, inevitably. And of course, those immortal words keep on resonating.
Thank you.